Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. There's nothing more satisfying than sitting down to eat with a group of friends who have the same interests and passions as you. That's exactly what happened recently when Liberty held its annual dinner in Washington, D.C. Good food, good interaction, and good memories. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is here to share with us highlights from that evening and some of the topics discussed and issues raised. Lincoln, the microphone is yours.
Well, we only got half an hour.
A lot of things happening that night.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to talk about. With our Liberty dinner, it's now a little bit over 9 years since we began an event that we wanted to become a must-have fixture of the Washington scene. It's certainly a must-have for religious liberty. Mm-hmm. At that time, just a bit over 9 years ago, in fact, it was about 10 years when we started planning it, we were only a year or two away from Liberty Magazine celebrating its 100th anniversary. Mm. And I still think that that's an amazing attainment, yes, for want of a better word, for a religious liberty journal, because we don't know of a religious liberty journal that's got that track record. In fact, there are precious few liberty journals like that in existence now, no matter how long they've been around.
Well, there's precious few journals in general that have that kind
absolutely
of track record.
Absolutely. Yeah. And very few that even exist now that might think they'll exist in a year or two's time. So yes, Liberty's committed to the very end as a Seventh-day Adventist church publication, and we share the church's prophetic sense. We intend to be around until the printing presses disappear, and it's close to that moment when Christ appears and proclaims eternal and everlasting liberty for all those that have followed him. You know, we planned in a little advance of the 100th anniversary an event like some that we had attended by other religious groups, not just religious liberty groups, where they would bring together legislators, diplomatic community, and other representatives of different churches together with an evening where you sit down to a nice meal, hear some moving speeches, give a few awards acknowledging people's work in that area, and generally just stake out a moment where people that either have a common cause with you or are inclined to, that you can encourage each other. And so we did that, and right from the beginning we've had good speakers. We had Hillary Clinton very early on. We had Senator John McCain. We had John Kerry. We've had two of the three. This is part of what I want to share to our listeners. We've had now three of the U.S. ambassadors for religious freedom. A number of congressmen and senators have attended and spoken, and we've made a mark for ourselves. And as I said when I stood up at this latest one, which was held for the first time at the new venue at the Marriott, the Wardman Park Marriott, very close to the Diplomatic Row, yes, so very convenient for the diplomats. But when I got up, I said that now it has become a fixture of the Washington religious liberty establishment, and it's a must-have occasion. Mm-hmm. And it's moved beyond just celebrating Liberty Magazine. It's become a venue, a very effective one, to remind people that we have Liberty Magazine, to remind them, and even some of our own Seventh-day Adventist members, that we have the North American Religious Liberty Association as a co-sponsor, which is a way to rally church lay people as activists in their legislative areas in the state or at the federal level to proclaim and defend religious freedom. We also put the International Religious Liberty Association, IRLA, in front of people. This is as it says, an international religious liberty coalition, mm-hmm, headed by the Adventist Church, but most of its members internationally are not Adventist or even necessarily Christians. And it works with governments and many religious groups around the world. So we banner the IRLA, and of course behind that, we're able to put very positively the image of the Seventh-day Adventist Church as initiator of this comprehensive explanation of the need of and the defense of religious freedom.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you were wanting to rally church people. Are we in need of rallying as a church or as
absolutely,
a Christian body?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You know, people belong to a church, in the case of Seventh-day Adventist Church, because they've bought into certain basic functions of it. In the case of the Adventist Church, it usually means, as the name implies, that they are expecting the soon return of Jesus Christ, because the events that they see around them find resonance in Bible prophecies. They've signaled that, like most other and all other Christians indeed, that they're following Jesus Christ and want to live Christ-like lives. You know, that's fine. I don't have a particular brief to say that Adventists or any other Christians forget that easily, but they easily become fairly lethargic about it, mm-hmm. sort of rest on their laurels, and they're comfortable in themselves that, yes, I'm one of Christ's followers. But as far as religious liberty, we know that if there are not defenders, the principle can easily be forgotten, mm-hmm. it can be compromised, and indeed people of faith like Seventh-day Adventists, even in the United States, as in the past, have found their religious freedom restricted mm-hmm. if they don't speak out.
Yeah.
So we want to encourage people to do all that they can to bring the principle before the public, before the legislators, and, of course, argue whenever there's a challenge to the broad principle that all people, as creatures of a creator God, all people, whether they believe in him or not, mm-hmm. have the right to believe what they want and to practice their faith or to not to practice it. And unless all have that right and are using it, in reality, nobody truly has the right.
So when we do not defend religious liberty, it's not like it goes into just neutral. It doesn't just coast along. It actually starts turning negative very quickly.
Absolutely, yeah. Very quickly. Yeah.
Okay. So that evening, if I look through the audience, who would I be seeing out there? What type of people?
Well, people like me. No, I was there.
Yes.
You would see, and it was good for our Seventh-day Adventist Church. We had, at that same time, there was a major conference at the world headquarters. So a lot of the world leaders from around the world were there. And at our dinner, I think we had about five or six division presidents of the different world regions. Mm-hmm. I know the president from my home area, where I come from, in the South Pacific, in Australia. He was there. Our world president of the church, Ted Wilson, Elder Ted Wilson, he was there, mm-hmm. and opened the evening with a welcome and a short prayer. But beyond that, we had a number of congressmen, we had a number of their staffers, we had a number of embassy personnel, ambassadors, first secretaries, and top staff. We had many people from the other religious communities. We had a number of government people, not just office holders per se, but people that work in the government for religious freedom. Mm-hmm. And our main speaker for the evening was Dr. Cook. She's a Baptist minister, and she's in the process of being confirmed as the new U.S. ambassador at large for religious freedom. So they're the types of people that you would see there. And there were about 250 people. We could have more people if we just opened it up for a group meeting type of thing. But this is by invitation only. It's a very select evening where they sit down to a meal as good as we can provide at that venue. And most people remarked this year that it was literally a banquet. And then we have a fast-moving program of short addresses and three awards. We have a national, an international, and an A.T. Jones Award to honor people for things that they've done. Then at the end of it, a little bit like the last few times, but unique to our program, we had some remarks by Knox Thames. He's Director of Policy and Research for the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Very important, for want of a better word, regulatory body in the United States government, mm-hmm. watching religious freedom all around the world and reporting to the president. In a little bit of the time that's left, I'd like to share what Knox said, because it was a poignant moment. You know, we're there to talk about religious freedom, and most people there, very free, although we had a number of ambassadors or embassies representing countries like Iraq, Afghanistan.
Yes.
Not always from an ideal situation, but it's reassuring for us to know that even those countries see the importance of reaching toward religious liberty. Mm-hmm. But it was a nostalgic moment because Knox Thames got up and spoke about, as he said, his friend Shahbaz Bhatti. And I think I might have mentioned him in passing at one of our recent programs. But for those that aren't familiar, Shahbaz Bhatti was killed a few weeks ago now, but he was the first ever non-Muslim member of the Pakistani parliament, a Christian. And he'd been elected there to deal with religious minorities. In fact, let me read it's not many sentences from Knox Thames. He says, he was my friend. He was a brave advocate for religious freedom. He stood up in the face of danger. He was killed. And Knox said, I had the honor of helping Washington policymakers get to know him and understand the value of his courageous work. We became friends over the course of 2 years and three D.C. visits. I'd been asked tonight to spend a few minutes in remembrance. And he says he was sworn in by the president in November, president of Pakistan, November of 2008, as the federal minister for minority affairs, becoming the first Christian in Pakistan's federal cabinet. Upon being sworn in, he declared, I decided to become federal minister for minority affairs to advocate the case of the oppressed and the marginalized communities of Pakistan. I have devoted my life to struggle for human equality, social justice, religious freedom, and to uplift and empower the religious minority communities of Pakistan. And Knox went on to say that he knew that Shahbaz was afraid. He says he told me as much on occasion, but he rarely admitted it. He was ready to die for the cause of helping his country, but he didn't want to die. Mm. That's a very important distinction, I think, for not just for religious liberty activists, but for Christians. We are called, if necessary, to put our lives on the line. We need to be ready, but nobody wants to die.
Yeah.
That's the province of fanatics and the crazies.
Yeah.
It says he squeezed every ounce out of being a religious freedom activist in the federal cabinet to make a difference before being murdered by the Pakistani Taliban on March 2. And he knew this was coming because the governor of the Punjab province, who had spoken out on the blasphemy laws, was killed by his bodyguard, and mullahs and imams all over the country applauded the killing, saying it was great, and nobody was prosecuted for that. Then the death threats started to come to Shahbaz, and he kept speaking out, and then he was killed. At the end of his speech, and I'm not going to read all of what Knox said, he says, I want to end on a positive note, as we best remember Shahbaz by making his death matter. I believe, he says, we can make a difference. I believe we can make a difference and carry on his work. We all have areas of influence that can have impact. We can all insist that religious freedom for all people everywhere be respected. And I really liked that call, and it was a very poignant moment. We had a moment of silence after this presentation where it's nice to have a great dinner. It's nice to hear good speeches. It's even nice for most of us to rub shoulders with people that you just generally see on TV, some of these different legislators. But it doesn't mean squat unless that translates into a promotion of religious liberty and practical defense in the real world. And so we were encouraging these people. And, of course, in different ways, they can make a difference. An ambassador can speak back to his country about how important it is and how there are other people in other countries that are watching how they treat their religious minorities. The legislators here, they sometimes just relate to their fellow legislators. But if they think there is a constituency that is expecting them to do the right thing, they're more likely to. And we as Seventh-day Adventists, I think we can be encouraged to do more and influence more people with this. So this was a highlight of the evening. There's no question in my mind. The speech by Dr. Suzanne Johnson Cook, the nominee for religious freedom ambassador, was very good. She said all the right things. She didn't get up, as some might have thought, like because she's the nominee of the president. There's some cynics around that would say, oh, it's going to be another Jeremiah Wright. By no means. She was I found her a very reasoned, articulate, a coherent presenter of the bedrock basic principles of religious freedom. And we offered the services of Liberty Magazine and of Nala and IRLA to her. And I know she was impressed by that because she needs to see that she's just not an office holder.
Yeah.
She's the spearhead of a coalition, not just of the willing, but of the motivated and committed people of good faith, of good intention toward other human beings.
You know, I like what you said there, because so often when you're doing the right thing, you do it in isolation. You wonder, does anyone really care that I'm doing this? If you're doing the wrong thing, you get lots of company. But when you're doing the right thing, you seldom have that. And that sounds like this dinner is what that was all about. It was bringing together people who are doing the right thing to say, hey, we're in this together.
Absolutely. Yeah. We gave several awards, as I said. One of the awards we gave to Kit Bigelow. She just recently stepped down as Director of External Affairs for the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of the U.S. Now, I don't know about you. Other than the few that I meet in Washington, I could drive probably across the U.S. a couple of times and not see a Baha'i temple or much evidence of them. But they exist. There are some thousands in this country. And Kit is certainly a very nice representative of any group. She's very representative, very friendly, open, cooperative person, and we wanted to acknowledge her work she's done defending not just her faith, but in the coalition. Again, she's been a very active proponent of religious freedom. And as I pointed out to our audience when I was giving her the award, you know, that religion in Iran, for example, as well as other countries, but particularly in Iran, the Baha'is have been persecuted unmercifully. A few years ago, we had a religious liberty conference in South Africa, and the top advisor to the previous president of Iran had attended. He was one of the mullahs, and he gave some interesting presentations. we appreciated hearing him. We didn't always agree with him. But at one point, he was asked, what about the Baha'is in your country? Now, hundreds of thousands of Baha'is have been killed in recent years in Iran. It's not just a slight persecution or something of the past. It's very close to genocide. And, you know, when he was asked about them, he didn't mince words at all. He says they deserved it because they backed the wrong party. And this is a guy attending a religious liberty conference. You'd think he would try to finesse it.
Really?
So, you know, we wanted to hold up the Kit and the Baha'is, not because I have any particular brief for their belief system. You know, I have radically different views as a Seventh-day Adventist Christian. But as a Christian, I have to respect the right of everybody to try to find a God and faith where they feel comfortable, where they're moved. And I have to respect it and allow it and enable it. And as I said before, unless they have that right, my right is at risk.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So this, you know, all in all, it was a wonderful dinner. We had a good balance between speeches, awards, recognition, challenge to honor you know, look forward to helping the situation in other countries. And the end point, and we told them very plainly, we're committed to doing this. We'll, you know, as long as there's a year ahead of us, we'll plan for a Liberty dinner. We don't want to raise the numbers much. The cost is quite significant, even though it's shared among the three organizations. But we think the payoff is way more than the cost.
I really can believe that because, like I said, when you want to work and you want to do good, you need to be told. And I think that's important for us as individuals, as citizens of this country. When we see someone who is standing for religious liberty, when we see someone who is defending the right of someone who may not believe the way we believe, we need to go to that person and say, well, good job for you. Great for you. That's how we can become involved in this process, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just to throw in another element that was certainly of more than passing interest, one of our honorees had flown in particularly for the occasion. He's a retired bishop of the Lutheran Church from Norway. And it was interesting for us because the recently retired president of the Seventh Adventist Church for the world, Dr. Jan Paulsen, is a Norwegian, mm-hmm. and we had him on hand to meet with his compatriot. But Bishop Gunnar Stelstedt was there. He received an award. He's a bishop of Oslo, former bishop of Oslo in Norway. He was a general secretary at one point of the Lutheran World Federation, and has been a member of the Norwegian Nobel Committee. Hmm. So a very well-recognized and much engaged proponent of religion and therefore religious freedom, and we honored him. But I think it just underscored that we have global reach. Yes. It's not just in Washington. It's not just Seventh-day Adventists. It's people of good faith and public office all over the world that are prepared to join with us and to argue for religious freedom.
That's the only way it's going to work, Lincoln, as you know. It can't be just one denomination. It can't be one group of people. It has to be a coalition of people. And I'm curious, Lincoln, you've had this dinner now for what, 9, 10 years?
This is the ninth year,
okay. When you started it, the world was a very different place. I mean, if you look at the difference between 2011 and 2003, I guess it was when you started, 2002, the world has changed significantly. Have we been able to keep up with this as religious liberty fighters? Are we getting behind the ball? Are we in front of the ball? How are we doing?
Well, it depends how you gauge success. If you gauge it on deterioration of religious freedom around the world, we're losing big time.
Yeah.
But you know, we don't believe.
Is that paralleled with appreciation for religious liberty in the mind?
Well,
I
think in certain areas there's a rising awareness.
Yeah.
And you could even argue that the eruptions in the Middle East have a component of self-determination. Well, they do have a component of self-determination, but you could argue that that's broadening their horizon on how religious freedom works in conjunction with civil freedoms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if we make our voice heard at these pivotal moments, I think we can truly help to enlarge religious freedom rather than see it constrict further. You know, it isn't whether we're turning back these negative forces. They may be unturnable.
Mm.
But I think what is easily argued is that without the efforts of many people like those represented at our dinner, it would be worse.
Yeah.
It would go more quickly in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And we know absolutely that in many cases, some of them a full national case, but in many situations, the efforts of religious liberty activists have made a very palpable, real difference.
Yeah.
And so that's our call. It's not, you know, in some ways, as a Christian is called, we're called to do what we do because it's right, not because, you know, every time we do something, we get a reward.
Yeah. One thing that you have really driven into my thoughts over the course of working with you on this program is that a lot of what happens in the world is a religious liberty situation. We think it's political, we think it's social, we think it's cultural, but if you just scratch below the surface, you're going to see a current going there of religious liberty, right?
Absolutely, or of religious activity. It's illiberal movements relating to religion, but religion's there. It's the clear subtext. Even in a nominally secular country, you know, we might say that Europe's secular, but I've said before, that's an illusion.
Yeah.
When the chips are down, it has strong religious identities, and even some of the cultural assumptions are very religious.
I want you to put on your pastor's hat for a minute. Is this because we have that God-sized hole in our heart, and everything is that we do and everything that we say really has the element in our own self of searching for God?
Well, I'd like to think so, of course.
Yeah.
But it's palpably obvious that humankind needs a sense of a greater meaning. It's mm-hmm. not enough just, you know, that you have a country, you have resources, you have people, and you sort of shuffle them all around to ease the way from the cradle to the grave. I would think someone would get rather depressed on that. And it's no mystery that the ancients, even those that didn't know the true God or even have a great spiritual instinct, would manufacture deities and meaning into rock outcroppings and so
right,
on.
Right.
I believe that human beings, as created beings, clearly have to look to a greater reality. They have to look to a power beyond. And religious liberty is not just worshipping a power. It's recognizing that we are, I've got to be careful how we say it. We're not gods, but we have this element of God within us.
Yes, yes.
That he created freedom. He's a God of creative power and energy, and he's given that to us. It's self-determination within, of course, the constraint of not going against the universal norms.
Yeah.
He doesn't expect that. But we have to give that privilege to other people.
Yeah.
And political power, the poverty in the world, or just the strictures of the hardness of day-to-day life, in many ways have denied that to people who are living constricted lives because of it. So religious freedom can open their horizon.
I like that, because we know that spirituality is a journey. We are all on a journey to whatever God we tend to be looking for. And if we restrict religious freedom, our own or someone else's, we are restricting that journey. And that journey is important to God, that we are on that journey and we're following it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we just have a couple minutes here left on the program. Lincoln, when you left that dinner and you got in your car and you drove through the dark streets of Washington, D.C. and got on the freeway, what sticks in your mind the most of what happened during the previous 3 hours of your night there?
Well, I come away with a wonderful sense of camaraderie.
Mm.
You know, people, I mean, they would talk to me anyway, but still, the easy free way, like I could sit at the table there and talk to Roscoe Bartlett, the congressman up near my district in Hagerstown. He happens to be a Seventh-day Adventist, but I don't believe he was there because he's an Adventist. We had Charlie Rangel, Congressman Charlie Rangel, who hit the headlines recently. You know, he was wandering through, waving at us, and we would talk for a bit. And, you know, I commented a bit to him about his trials of late, and then talking to the ambassadress. And this, it's wonderful. And yes, we have common purpose. Maybe an email would remind him of that. But there's nothing like a human connection. And a sense that we're family in the absolute sense that we're comfortable with each other, and that social occasion can accomplish that what probably nothing else can do.
All right. Well, we look forward to the next get together. We will
year.
Certainly.
And you need to come.
I will do
and,
that.
And
absolutely.
Some of our listeners too. It's not open to everybody, but if they're interested. It might be possible, and they certainly could contact us at libertymagazine.org.
All right, libertymagazine.org. Lincoln, thank you so much. Our time has flown
by. My pleasure,
by.
As always.
Listeners, so glad you have tuned in, and until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed, reminding you that you can rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.